Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Today we kick off our first Open House Live panel for the year, and we're tackling a topic that's cropped up in the news on more than one occasion in recent weeks, bullying. Whether it's in the schoolyard or the workplace, Australians are experiencing bullying more frequently than ever before. A recent report shows that more than one in four Year 4 to Year 9 Australian students reported being bullied every few weeks. And a 2013 study of workplaces shows that workplace bullying cost the Australian economy in excess of $36 billion in lost productivity. It's often thought that bullying stops after school, but clearly that's not the case. In 2012, over 2,500 people committed suicide, and in over 80% of the cases, bullying was the main contributing factor. Joining us today to speak to this issue are two very special guests, with valuable insights both on how to overcome bullying wherever we may face it. Brett Murray is an anti-bullying advocate and consultant, and the author of Make Bullying History. And psychologist Meredith Fuller has practiced for over 35 years, specialising in career development, and also the author of a fascinating book on bullying, Working with Mean Girls. Welcome both. Brett, let's start with you. Paint a broader picture for us of the impact of bullying in our community.
Well, as you said, you know, the statistics are out there. I mean, research that we did in conjunction with McCrindle Research stated that 63% of all school children across Australia actually suffer from long-term bullying, and that's long-term ongoing violence, threats of violence or antagonisation. It's not just one-off negative incidences, because that does not equate to bullying. Bullying behaviour has to be long-term and sustained and usually targeted. And of the 63% of those students, these were high school students, 91% stated that their bullying actually started as early as year four. And a very scary statistic that you mentioned, in 2012, 2,500 people committed suicide right across Australia, and 80% of those cases were bullying related, but 450 of those people were under the age of 18. So we're looking at, you know, more than one young person a day is taking their own life, and for every one young person that does, there's nine attempts. So it's quite a scary statistic. And I mean, when we did our research back in 2010, only 33% of young people were being bullied through social media. Now that's up over 50% because of the prevalence of internet-enabled devices.
Meredith, in your book, as given by the headline, we find, in also supported by this anti-bullying study, the No Bull Program, that the majority of bullies are girls, women.
In fact, women can be so insidious in the way they go about bullying, whether it's by excluding others or doing that toxic two-faced thing, and it's so subtle, it's very hard to articulate to other people, so it can really run rampant. And that's why it's such a concern that women are not even talking about it, because they feel so ashamed to let down the sisterhood. So it's been quite insidious for a very long time. But of course, it's really an adult expression of what we've seen at school.
Speaking of schools, we're going to leap into our listeners' callers straight away. Meredith and Brett, thank you for joining us for this open panel. Carmen, good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for joining us early in Open House for our special bullying edition. What's your experience been in your house?
Oh, look, my son has been bullied at school since it started in first grade, and went on. You know, he's been to a mixture of government and Christian schools where it's occurred. And my experience, it's, you know, he was suicidal. I've had him in lots of counselling, prayed about it. You know, as he's at a school where it's not occurring now, thank goodness, but the damage is done. And I found that myself as a parent, whenever I got in there to advocate on his behalf, the response was, you know, they just shut off the communication, they're defensive, you know, the administration of the various schools. The Department of Education at one stage, like I went through the Human Rights Commission, the department refused to meet with me for 5 minutes is all I asked. 5 minutes, and they would not meet with me. So, you know, now I just go straight to litigation, actually, and I'm studying law. Such the impact has been on me personally that, you know, actually I feel like I need a law degree to defend us.
I'm going to introduce Brett to the conversation and shortly Meredith Carmen, because they both have their specialty. Brett, can I ask you, is firstly Carmen's experience unusual? Are we not getting better at dealing with bullying in schools?
Well, unfortunately, Carmen's experience is not isolated. It's the same right around Australia. I mean, we've got our teaching fraternity, the teachers themselves are suffering from what we call curriculum creep. They're being expected to teach more and more topics without the curriculums being updated. So there's more and more demand on them. And then they have the social justice side of things demanded on them as well. They've got to become behavioural managers. And so they have to deal with bullying. And the research shows that only 27%, so less than a third of kids who are actually being bullied, will ever actually articulate it to the school. So it's a problem that the schools, by and large, are unaware of, because bullies will never actually antagonise their victim in front of an authority figure. And so when schools are unaware of the bullying happening, when it becomes something that's been put in front of them and say, hey, you know, my child's being bullied, a lot of the times the schools and their systems feel overwhelmed, because the teachers, by and large, don't have the training or nor the resources to deal with it. So they feel swamped, and they sort of, you know, do the best they can with what they got. I mean, majority of the principals that I actually work with are very, you know, proactive in, you know, wanting to have bullying policies in their school. And if they know about it, they try and actually, you know, work on it as much as they can.
But like in my experience, you know, you report it as a, you know, you do all the right things, follow the procedure, and then they end up focusing all the attention on the bully and don't worry about the person who's been impacted by it. That's if they do anything at all. If they don't, you know, that's, you know, I'm sure
I would agree with that
out
for
there.
I'd agree with that for sure, Carmen. And this is where it highlights, the benefit and the value of chaplains in schools, because this is where they can come in and they can provide the counselling, the mentorship, the liaising between students and teachers. And they're such a valuable asset to schools. And I think it's, you know, we're so blessed that the federal government has actually, you know, refunded that program for the next 3 years with $241 million for chaplains in schools, which is going to help ease the burden. But, yeah, we need to really get some more resources in schools. And you know, unfortunately, that's why I have a job.
Meredith, can I ask you, as a therapist and helping families who are living through bullying, what Carmen can continue to do to perhaps redress the damage that has been done to Carmen's son as a result of what seems to be an endemic bullying problem?
Well, firstly, Carmen, good on you for doing something so proactive and demonstrating your resilience. The thing that we notice about the children who are often targeted, they are invariably emotionally intelligent, tuned in, kind, sensitive, people-oriented, and a little bit unusual or different, and more skilled or gifted in certain areas, which, because they are a little apart from, makes them the target. If they can get through this, the good news is, as adults later on, with support from families who believe in them, with support from therapists, counsellors, chaplains and friends, these children grow up into fantastic adults who are often so much more aware of human capital and have so much more to offer because they understand all of these experiences. But, of course, one of the issues is because they are so sensitive, they feel it, they experience it, and it's horrendous for them. The biggest thing they need to do is talk about it. Mothers like you who encourage their children to discuss it and talk about it, it's the best thing, because we normalise the experience if we can talk about it and say, well, hang on, who's got the problem? The other thing I'm aware of is those schools who push strong, clear leadership and transparent communication are having the best results. And so I always would suggest, look for the schools where principals are committed to professional and personal development, where the leading teams are interested in professional development, and they really push this notion of clear communication, and they have protocols in the schools, because everyone needs to take responsibility for what the rules of engagement are. And this ensures that we get a better experience of people being able to talk about what's acceptable and what isn't.
Carmen, thank you so much for your call. Bye. Our guests are psychologist Meredith Fuller, with 30 years' experience practicing psychology and working with bullying subjects, and I suspect with bullies as well, Meredith. Would that be the case?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of bullies actually don't realise that their inappropriate behaviour is upsetting people, and they're shocked to be sent to me to find out that's why people are funny with me. A lot of them just don't know.
We're going to get to more of that in a few moments' time. And Brett Murray as well, anti-bullying advocate and the author of Make Bullying History. We're coming back with Jam in a few moments' time to continue our bullying conversation on Open House Around Australia.
Life, faith and culture. Open House with Dwayne Jeffries.
We are living in times where perhaps it's easier than ever to bully someone, and we're doing it online, we're doing it in schools, it's infiltrating workplaces. There is no age immune to the bully. Jam, good afternoon. Thank you for joining the conversation. What would you like to add?
I wanted to ask a question. Right now we're living in a society where there's a lot of reality TV shows. Like an example would be like The Real Housewives of Melbourne. And I feel that reality TV shows, in a way, normalize for us, for the society, behavior, specifically around among women. I don't know if any of you have watched that particular series, but you do see a bunch of women and, you know, all powerful and independent, but you can see streaks of being mean-spirited and rude, confrontational, some of them assertive. How do you define, I suppose, and understand when a person has gone beyond that line and become a bully?
Meredith, as the author of Working with Mean Girls, you might like to add something to this.
Firstly, Jen, I think your word mean-spirited absolutely hits the spot. There's also the comment Brett made about it being not so much seen where there's someone of authority to stop them. A lot of what you see with this insidious behaviour is women who are using their agenda because they don't actually articulate what the real issue is, so they get their needs met in this secondary way. So, for example, a lot of the women go to that point of trying to make someone else feel bad because they feel bad themselves. But what we're really looking at is saying, first of all, we need a culture of manners and minimum standards of politeness. We are so rude to the people, and we start to believe that it's acceptable because we see these shows on television and we read about celebrities in the papers, and we've lost our respect for how we treat each other in the first place. Mm-hmm. So you can see the slippery slope that people can move on. And I suspect what can happen is most of the people who receive the behaviour are so polite and nice, it doesn't occur to them to say, I'm out of here, unless you treat me differently, I'm not coming back, and actually refuse to leave themselves in the sights of these women. And I think it's really important for us to remember that we can choose to say we're not comfortable with these people and not feel that we have to endure this behaviour. And I think that most of the people who do get bullied are so polite, it doesn't come onto their consciousness that they don't have to stay with these people, they don't have to be near this. And I think it's very important to often to walk away, because we won't have the power to change the bully, but we must lower the impact by not subjecting ourselves to that pain.
Jam, thank you for your call. We're going to move on to Leonie, who actually has a very similar point to the one that Meredith was making a few moments ago. Leonie, talk about confronting a bully where this news may come as a surprise to them.
Yeah, I guess mine is a workplace situation, so it's not, you know, so much something that you're able to walk away from. What's your opinion on are people able to be bullies and not realise it? and then what is the best way to manage it.
Brett, would you like to address this one for us?
Well, as Meredith said, there are so many people out there that, it's part of their normality. People are a product of their environment, and, a lot of times people can be rude, obnoxious, just downright blunt, because that's the environment that they've grown up in. And so when it comes to just having, as Meredith has always alluded to, we need to have a basic standard of manners and respect. And respect and dignity and honour is not something that we see a lot of coming through the schools, and therefore it's translated into, the workplace. But to confront someone on those issues would be to, approach them and not attack them or be accusatory in your approach, but basically say, did you realise that when you said that, it came off as pretty blunt or pretty rude? Would there be another way of approaching that? But if this person continually is, in a position of authority and they're verbally berating you, or they're threatening or intimidating or trying to manipulate, well, that's when you've got to start utilising all the different mechanisms that are in place in the workplace these days, that, going and seeing, getting people like Meredith involved and having them to be able to, liaise between yourself and your colleague. But oftentimes, hurt people hurt people. And if it's the only behaviour they've ever experienced, oftentimes it's the only behaviour they can ever show.
Meredith, if we take a problem to the next level in a workplace, for instance, that's a pretty scary prospect in and of itself, because now you are bringing somebody else into the conversation and it becomes a bigger deal.
Firstly, it's important, if you are experiencing this, make sure you're not alone with the other person. Where possible, have someone near you or with you. Take notes and encourage human resources or senior management to demonstrate positive protocols in the culture so that everyone takes responsibility for speaking out if people are inappropriate. There needs to be rewards for good communication and team behaviour, and there needs to be people who say that is not tolerated in our organisation. We're going to deal with this because it's not funny, it's not a joke, and it's not that someone's too sensitive. So I think, again, this idea of having well-led organisations that do value clear communication and where people are not afraid to talk about these things and to say there are better ways. And it's so obvious that if we work well together in teams and people feel safe and trusted to speak, productivity goes up, job satisfaction goes up, and organisations that won't tolerate this behaviour usually find that they'll go and you'll start recruiting more adult people. So it is important to take those notes, get verification from other people. You want to find out, is it just me or has this happened to someone else? And that you are able to get it discussed in other areas like HR, employee assistance program, with your manager, with the people who are your friends and colleagues, because it's the silence that makes it so debilitating.
Actually, I guess key here, thank you, Leonie, for your call, Meredith, is we're not being whingers when we take this to the next rung. What we are doing is making our workplaces a better place for others to come in and join, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And then we can see that we're all advocating for the same thing. We want to get the best out of people, and we are diverse, and we do need to learn how to value difference instead of this clicky thing that can happen that can be just ruinous for someone who's a little different or just someone who, for whatever reason, has caught the eye of someone who wants to exclude them.
Our guests are Meredith Fuller, who is a psychologist working with those who have been bullied as well as bullies, and also Brett Murray, who's an anti-bullying advocate and the author of Make Bullying History, a terrific inter-schools program around the country, and much more. Aaron, you've had an issue with a boss in the past.
Yes, I have.
Do you want to tell us a little about the story?
It's pretty much superior, like just looking down on you and certain little things of saying things. You actually probably don't really realise it, that you're being picked on until you go home and start to think about it, and it just... Yeah, actually, you realise from my past, especially, I was bullied a lot when I was in primary school and high school, and so very emotional, as mentioned before, with people being bullied and stuff. But you don't actually realise it until you're home and you think about it. And I don't know if that actually makes sense.
It does. Meredith and Brett, when is enough enough? When do we have enough conversations with people for us to be able to make a case that this is bullying?
I think the thing that Aaron picked up on is so important. When you feel uncomfortable, when you feel somehow you're losing your sense of self, that's a very good example. And the other one is how important it is that rather than just go home, we start to learn how to wait a moment and ask questions like when these nasty comments are made, that we can particularly in meetings say things like, could you just repeat that? I'm not exactly sure what you meant by that. Often what happens is nasty slurs or comments are made and we're so nice and polite we don't ask for public clarification. But then, of course, it hits us when we go home and we realise they've had a go at us, and it's awful because we've lost the moment, and then we start thinking, oh, look, we're too slow. It's always okay to say, could you clarify that? Could you repeat that? I'm not clear what you meant by that, so that it makes it much harder for them to do these behaviours in meetings.
Aaron, thank you for your call. We're going to move on to Liz, who has another perspective on that same issue. Liz, good afternoon. You accused a boss of bullying.
Hi, no, I am a boss.
Okay.
And one of my team members actually accused me of bullying her because I was performance managing her. So, you know, that's gone through the whole work cover system, and that was that claim was rejected. But I'm dealing with that as a Christian. How far do you take, you know, someone's bullying claim? Is it, are they then harassing me because they don't want to be performance managed?
Wow.
You know?
Mm-hmm. That is a difficult conversation, Brett.
Yeah,
well, I mean, I deal with a lot of clients in the corporate sector as well, and a lot of the times when people are asked to, you know, live up to their KPIs, when they're actually asked to deliver the service that they're actually employed to do, a lot of people start wanting to recoil, and unfortunately there's a bit of a laziness that's slipped into the Australian workplace culture, although, you know, statistics show that we actually work more hours. But when transparency and responsibility is actually put on people, saying, okay, you've been employed to do this task, you've given this set amount of time, and we're paying you this amount of money to do it, why isn't it being done? A lot of times now, the laws, unfortunately, are sort of geared towards the employee rather than the employer, and the onus is on the employer to prove the case wrong rather than the employee to prove it right. Now, I don't think there's actually a perfect answer or a system to this, but I think when it comes to the employee assistance programs and everything that are in there, it tends to create a bit of a cotton wool type of society, so that we don't want to upset anyone, and people don't actually have to be accountable for their actions. And I think something that I've worked with a couple of major, you know, like stock exchange listed clients, where when they employ the people, they make it very clear right from the word go, this is what the expectations are of us. This is what you can, you know, we expect of you. This is what you can expect of us. Like Meredith mentioned before, having great leadership. I've worked with a brilliant client where they state right off the bat, gossip is not tolerated in their workplace. And they actually make that clear when you sign up. And these are the sort of policies and procedures that we will follow through on. If you're asked to do a task, then we will expect it to be done. We'll give you a little bit of leeway if there's any contributing factors that are slowing that down, but at the end of the day, you're paid to do a job.
Meredith, can I ask this question? Here's the conflict from an outsider's perspective, in that we're asking people to stand up for their rights, have the courage to say they're feeling bullied, they're feeling harassed, and yet what language does a manager need to use so that that's not blown back in their face?
Great point. In my book, I identified 8 types of what I call mean girls, but the last one I call the not a bitch category, which absolutely explains this. It's when you have realistic expectations, but the individual twists it into, oh, you're a bitch. And one of the things that's important for any individual who is coming to a third party to say, look, oh, they're a bitch, they're horrible, they're mean, they're bullying me, is to go through a process where they actively must look at their own behaviour. So they're not projecting their own laziness, lack of attention, whatever, onto the manager. And so I always think it's very important to go through these checklists and get clarification about the appropriateness. And all of those points that Brett made is so critical. And that's why good work organisations do regular reviews. How are we going? How are we getting the best out of each other? What's expected? At what standard? At what level? How are we managing? And in that way, it's much harder for the person who's trying to railroad a very decent manager with this behaviour, because it's terribly difficult when you are trying to performance manage someone and you're actually just expecting them to do what they're paid for.
Right.
Liz, thank you for your call. And,
thank you.
And while I'm glad that you've moved out of those troubled waters, it's a difficult thing to deal with as a manager, particularly now, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Thank you for your time. Have a great afternoon.
Okay, then. Bye.
This is Open House Around Australia. And when next we come back, social media and bullying.
Across the nation, this is Open House with Dwayne Jeffries. Subscribe to our podcast, openhousecommunity.com.au.
On Open House Around Australia, you have joined us in a bullying workshop, not a how to live with it, but a how to live through it workshop. In 2012, over 2,500 people committed suicide, and in over 80% of those cases, bullying was the main contributing factor. It exists in our schools from as young as year four and less on some occasions, and it's costing workplaces conservatively $36 billion a year in lost productivity. Our guests on the panel today are Brett Murray, anti-bullying advocate and consultant for companies big and small, as well as the author of the Make Bullying History Program, and psychologist Meredith Fuller, who has 30 years of experience practicing psychology and specializing in career development. Team, we're now moving online, and Ashley joins us. Tell us about your experiences on Facebook.
So when I was in year 10, I had a falling out with someone in my year and was friends with her on Facebook, and so I deleted her and things like that. But she obviously was still quite upset with me, and so she actually moved through someone, an ex-student at the school, and had contacted him, and he then was messaging me on Facebook and saying really hurtful things and things. And so I had to actually take that to a teacher and say, hey, look, this is what's happening. And they were able to work through it, but it's extremely hard on social media because of the fact that you don't actually see the person, you don't know who's all there, who's all seeing it. But on the plus side, at least you do have the ability to save what they've said and have proof.
That's an interesting perspective, having proof. Brett, can I ask you, clearly we live in an age where we have invisible bullies as well as visible. Are there any different techniques to dealing with bullying online?
Well, as Ashley said, the most important thing you need to do is actually take a record of what's being said. I've worked with the Federal Police and the New South Wales Police on so many cases where the bullying has gone on sometimes for years, and you just have to, you know, keep the evidence, I suppose, of that negative stuff. Ashley did the right thing by unfriending that person or even blocking them from their account. Yes, it's unfortunate that there's not enough sort of safeguard within the social media sphere where you don't know who's going to be seeing things, you don't know who's going to be reading things, you don't know who's actually in that room with that person or on that phone with that person while they're spreading this maliciousness. When it comes to, I suppose, cyber bully-proofing children, I suppose the parents' responsibility is to make sure that they're engaged online with their kids and that the computers and phones are never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, left alone in the room with the child unsupervised. And as parents, it's our responsibility to make sure that we've got the passwords and the access to, you know, all of the accounts. And that's not being a prior or, you know, being a stick in the mud. That's being a protective, responsible parent. If our kids are engaging in behaviour that's actually detrimental to their health, we need to be able to protect them and stop that. When it comes to, you know, just Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, you know, Facebook, all that sort of stuff, you know,
we have laws that protect freedom of speech, but we also have anti-stalking laws that if someone is continually slandering and bullying someone, cyberbullying someone online, these anti-stalking laws do actually facilitate the ability to, bring that person to justice. And the more that this message is spread with schools and students understand that what they're doing is actually illegal, then hopefully that will deter them from engaging in this type of behaviour. But it all comes back down to the parents. Parents need to be actively engaged and not just abdicating their authority, saying, "Well, I'm not a digital native, I don't know what to do, it's all too hard." Well, we've got to step up as parents and say, well, it may be hard, but we've got to do something about it.
Meredith, clearly it's not as simple as just taking the stuff off the kids, but equally, when we are living in this this interconnected world on social media, defriending someone just means that our imagination kicks in, or friends of ours who are still friends of theirs feed back to us what's being said. How do we proof ourselves against what we don't know is being said behind our backs?
First thing, with the social media, it's really important that everyone takes self-responsibility for liking and reinforcing positive statements, useful statements, good stuff. And when anyone says something that's inappropriate, awful, nasty, rather than make a fuss of it, absolutely ignore them, so that the people who are getting likes, reinforcements are for good stuff, and everyone takes responsibility for saying things like, "I can't see how that statement's useful," "I can't see how there's any evidence to that." So in actual fact, it becomes a foolish thing to do, because your peers are saying, "We're not tolerating this. We're adult, we're reasonable," whether we're in year 10 or year 12, we're not prepared to give this any oxygen. So it's really important that we all get behind the fact that positive reinforcement for good, supportive statements is the go, and that we can all demonstrate that we're not interested in all that rubbish. And I think in that way, we're banding together to say this is the better world that we're all working towards. So it's really important that we support our colleagues and our friends and do that actively.
Ashley, now that you've come through the other side of what was a particularly tricky time, what did you learn about it, and how's that impacted the way you connect with your friends online?
I think just as a person in school, it allowed me to see how other students were maybe feeling when they were bullied, and it allowed me to feel like I could advocate on their behalf as an older student or a peer of theirs, and be able to, when they don't have the courage, to be able to then go to the teachers and say, with them, and say, "Look, you know, I'm here with so-and-so because they are being bullied and we want to put a stop to it." And online, it also just, you know, it helped you to realise that what you put out there is for everyone, and then making sure you know what you're putting out there and knowing what is being said, you just are basically saving yourself from heartache later.
Ashley, thanks so much for bringing a different perspective to the conversation. Have a great afternoon.
No, I thank you.
Brett and Meredith, we're coming to the end of our window, but I want to ask you about teachers who are living in a bullying environment, not with kids bullying each other, but with perhaps teachers being bullied, because kids are aware of their rights and they are willing to test those everywhere they go. That's the nature of teenagers. It's a pretty difficult place for a teacher to be.
I have got to be honest, I haven't come across too many cases of this. I mean, having spoken in schools for the last 11 years, very few cases have come to my attention. But I have had, the odd conversation with a teacher who has had a student who's rather antagonistic, and the parents become rather supportive of the student and refuse to believe that there's anything wrong that their child has done. And, when Meredith was mentioning the employee assistant programs and HR, I mean, teachers do actually have this system in place within the education department and also private sector schools. And it's exactly the same. They have to report it, they have to record it, they have to make sure that this behaviour is witnessed. And it's really the same sort of process it needs to be engaging in. And obviously, teachers have a fraternal amongst themselves, and then there is support networks amongst each other, and this can be dealt with. But again, I think what Meredith mentioned before in the workplace bullying, it has to be recorded, has to be witnessed, and your superiors have to know about it.
Meredith Fuller, I'm going to wrap up the conversation here with us, but let me ask you for One of the key lessons that you go to every time somebody comes to you with a case of bullying, where do we begin to disengage from these destructive relationships most effectively?
Don't chase after them wanting to make them your friend, try to understand them, or feel that you're not allowed to remove yourself. Speak up and get support from other people who you respect, who seem to manage people well, and go and get some support from counsellors, friends, chaplains, anyone who you know will treat you with the respect that you deserve.
And Brett Murray, your experience?
I would say that first and foremost, we need to understand that what the bullies say is quite often a projection of what they fear or loathe about themselves, and that we have intrinsic, amazing, incredible value as individuals, and oftentimes what the bullies are saying and projecting is not the truth. The truth is that we, each as individuals, have incredible, amazing self-worth, and we need to fundamentally base our self-esteem and self-worth on that rather than what the bullies are saying.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.